And welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz of the newly formed Bad Hombres, ready to take the town by storm. Hombres.
We got some Bad Hombres here at CFRU. Bad Hombres. The ladies here are nice. They're not nasty. They're very nice. Although I... Never mind. CFRU is...
Don't go there.
Don't go there. CFRU, its political affairs discussion show, is open source as well, and you can listen to us here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel, or you can subscribe through iTunes. Today we will consider praise for Walmart, oddly enough, and in the way they treat their workers, double odd. It's weird to say that, but the world's largest retailer is trying to do better by its employees, higher wages, better training, and in some ways it seems to be working, but will Walmart stick with it? And if they do, will their ideas catch on? And then, fellow CFRU programmer Amy Goodman avoided some jail time this week when a North Dakota judge said that a journalist can't be locked up for reporting a story about an oil company just because they don't want to be told. They don't want it to be told. It's a rare blow in favor of press freedom, but will it last? And will it strengthen the company's resolve to shut down dissent? And then we will take a look at the unending mess of the 2016 presidential election south of the border, where one candidate has said today that he will only accept the determination of the American people if he wins. So now there's that.
That's our comedy break, yeah.
I wish it was comedy. Yeah, but first, it seems that our complaints about the long, sleepy conservative leadership campaign have been resolved because there was some pretty big news in last week. Several new contenders stepping forward or are about to take the step forward. At least one of them stepped back, which was interesting, but I think perhaps the biggest moves belong to two former Tory cabinet ministers. One is Milton MP Lisa Raitt, who... resigned as the shadow cabinet member. She was the finance critic for the Conservatives. She stepped away from that, which sends a pretty strong signal. She intends to put her time and effort into other things, like running for leader. And then the one person who did declare outright, Aaron O'Toole, the former Veteran Affairs Minister, former veteran himself, he announced he is running, and that was I think his name was in the mix at certain points, but I think him stepping up was kind of a surprise. But it's I think a good surprise, because I think we'll get to Lisa Raitt in a minute, but Aaron O'Toole, who we know is for a fact in the race, he has experience cleaning up messes made by the previous office holder. He was the Veterans Affairs Minister after Julian Fantino, and that wasn't an easy seat to take after Julian Fantino sat in it.
No, and also really not hard to top Fantino, so good riddance to him, in my view. Where did I say? I think it was in iPolitics, and Peter McKay, who is not entering the race, it seems, was gushing about Lisa Raitt. You know, all of the adjectives. It was, she's intelligent, she's capable, she's hardworking, she's likable. I don't think all of that would get put out there unless it was going to happen. Now, surprisingly, a lot of times we have political people who, let's say, wish they say they're spending more time with the family. They're not necessarily. I'm sort of surprised at this, considering her situation with her husband right now, who has Alzheimer's.
Early onset Alzheimer's.
Early onset Alzheimer's, true. Now, perhaps he's all for her doing this, but you know, normally when there's a family situation like that, people like to take a step back. So maybe she's made arrangements or whatever, and that's fine. And it'll be interesting, very interesting to see her in the race. Strategists have called her the most human candidate, as opposed to Harper, who was a Cyberman, I think, or something. So yeah, and also coincidentally, on the weekend, I happened to be in Collingwood, and I was walking by the theater there, the old theater. And the Kelly Leach rollout was happening. I didn't actually see her. I saw a lot. Yeah, an official launch happened. And it was, I really wanted to go in, but the people I was with were having no part of it. So probably would have got thrown out anyway. But I wasn't going in to heckle or anything. But I thought, wow, it seemed a bit nondescript. I think there was a little bit on the internet, but yeah, no, it was a Saturday. It was like, I don't know. I don't know if you're going to get any.
It was pretty low key. Because I thought she had already had some kind of announcement, but I guess.
Maybe this was an attempt at a local announcement, like to have it in Collingwood. So I don't know. But it's a nice looking theater. I wanted to go in on the premise of checking out the theater. But anyway, so yeah, so there's lots of things happening in that department. Unlike NDP, let's say. Well, I guess we'll talk about that some other time, but cue the crickets. Crick, crick. Yep.
No, so. You're right. And actually, there was a, I think the Hill Times wrote about how, you know, there's lots of people who were assuming are going to jump into the NDP race, but they're kind of taking their sweet time.
It looks like Peter Julian is up. That's it, right? That just came out in the past 24 hours that he's...
I think he's the only one who's like kind of said anything affirmative about running for leader. Yeah, like still, somebody that's like, would you run for leader? Like, yeah, I wouldn't rule it out.
Kind of sort of maybe.
I was like,
I might.
Julian's in because he doesn't want to rule it out. And that is, of course, a rule in politics. You're not out till you're out. You're always in until you say you're out. And
well, that's not till next October. Have I got that right?
Or I think
like
so.
A year to come. Whereas the conservative one is May.
Is in May.
Late May. May 27th, I think, is the number. Sticks out?
Yeah. But, I mean, it wasn't too long after when earlier this year. It was before they had the convention back in the spring that people started, you know, dipping their toe. There really hasn't been anyone dipping their toe in NDP. And, you know, full credit to Steve Paikin, who went there with a blog post on the Agenda blog about, is this the beginning of the end of the federal NDP? Which was like, wow, it's, you know, I think so I remember.
Throw the gas canister into the room and see what happens.
True, but I remember a lot of those editorials being written after the Liberals lost in 2011. It's like, is this the end of the Liberals?
So, well, I mean, we see the Liberal Democrats.
Yeah.
We might.
So,
I don't know yet.
There, we let some air into the NDP. The conservative race, meanwhile, and I found this interesting. There are like many subtle levels of candidacy. So, you know, there are people who have declared and registered as running for leader. There are people who have just declared their intention to run for leader. There are people who have, you have to also pay an amount, I think it's $50,000 to make it like official, to go from you are running to making it official. And I think you can pay it in installments, which is why there's, you know, there's people who are registered but not haven't paid yet. There's only one candidate so far who has declared, registered, and paid, and that is Michael Chong.
Friend of the show, Michael Chong. And it looks like graduating to the expected to run column is Chris Alexander, who was on.
Which is weird.
Yeah, very weird. Now, he's saying he's not trying to redeem himself for his issues, let's say, the last campaign, which he lost. I think he was back on Power and Politics. I didn't see it, but he really, that's where he blew it. I mean, that became a sort of five worst political moments of the campaign was him saying something that was blatantly false and Rosie
Barton.
I was going to say Rosie O'Donnell. Rosie Barton went for the jugular. And also that moment with Terry Molesky, who's just retired from CBC, and he's like, don't tell me to watch it. Have you seen that bit?
Yeah, goodness.
That's fantastic stuff. But again, it was Chris Alexander's like, you should watch it. He just seems like a jerk to me. Bit pompous, in my view. I don't think he's going to endear himself to anybody, especially because he was in with the rat line as well, along with Kelly Leach. I personally think anybody in this who has, you know, the too much of the brushing of the dusting of Harper isn't going to do well. And I don't think we see that in Lisa Raitt. Maybe some of the others. Maybe Aaron O'Toole. But then there's the fundies, as I call them, the fundamentalist types like Trost and... I think this mysterious Adrian Snow who has appeared. I'm not even, I have no, well, she's not even an MP. She's just.
No, she's like a Toronto. I think she's in PR, actually.
She's like the Brian Top of this. Well, maybe not as high up in the rankings, but it's just sort of like, who, people will say, who is that? Who is Adrian Snow?
Yeah, there is kind of some random
people. Who is John
Snow?
There's John's sister.
Rich Peterson is a Vancouver businessman.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, he ran for the BC Conservative Party leadership, which is a thankless job because the BC Liberals are the BC Conservative Party.
Yes.
And
there's like three conservatives. Well.
Yeah, and Andrew Sexton, who was in the Harper government and was like a parliamentary secretary, but he also has private life business experience. So they're both from PC. I don't know what to what degree they are. I mean, they're declared their interest. I'm not sure where they go from there. Yeah, and there's the Trost, Brad Trost, who's, you know, I am a proud social conservative, which I'm sorry, Brad, it's not going to win you any points.
Pierre Lemieux falls in that category too, yeah. Isn't he, I think?
You have Maxime Bernier, who I don't think we talked about in a while, Deepak Gobre, Andrew Scheer, of course, who's kind of got lost in the shuffle, even though he's, you know, he and Kelly Leach were... both were kind of trying to... I don't know if they were trying to establish an early rivalry, but I guess that's kind of what happened.
Scheer was the speaker, right? That's where that whole elitist argument came. Yeah. We won't go there again. You can listen to it in the archives, folks. Let them fight it out. But, and, of course, we've lost Gazebo Tony.
Oh, Gazebo.
Gazebo Tony, he doesn't have any money, he says.
He didn't want to put his family at financial risk, he
played the family card. I'm not sure how that would... Well, I guess it does in a way, but you would hope you'd be able to raise enough money among your friends.
Well, we'll talk about your Harper Stink. I mean, that's... he's probably...
Harris Stink.
Yeah, he's probably the most damaged by that. At least in terms of
when somebody
comes
in here and calls you Gazebo Tony, there's obviously, you know...
I mean, it is interesting who is stepping up and who is not stepping up, because I mean, yeah, Leach and Alexander are both going to be ankled by the same thing, which is the barbaric cultural practice line. Alexander even more to a certain extent because he became the face of the refugee situation in the middle of the campaign when
they're all pure wool Harperites, right? So it's difficult to undo that.
Yeah, so. Chong's going to have, obviously, a lot of room to maneuver because he left cabinet on principle.
Supposedly the only person in history to have done that, to have left. He wasn't... A lot of people have been pushed out of cabinet, but he resigned. Only person ever, so...
And,
willing to take a stand, if that counts for your brownie point counter.
And I think Aaron O'Toole gets a lot of brownie points for rescuing Veterans Affairs there in the last... 10 months of the conservative government, but I think when we're looking forward, Lisa Raitt is going to be the one to beat. I think
she's got high rollers like McKay singing the praises, and it seems like she's very well liked too.
She seems more moderate.
And doesn't I think she was able to speak on her own. I never got the impression that she was reading the playbook from the playbook. She was just she was, but she wasn't. You know what I mean? You can tell the people that are scripted usually rookies, but
she's
Calandra style.
Yeah, she was like part of the Harper government, but I guess there's kind of maybe a separation factor because she's like a Southern Ontario MP.
An Atlantic connection.
Yeah. And so actually, interesting.
Cape Breton, right, originally?
I believe so. But interestingly, Aaron O'Toole also said he wants to focus on getting conservatives back on the map in Atlantic Canada. So that was like something he announced that was going to be his intention as leader. And let's be honest, they can't do much worse in Atlantic Canada. And
it was all red last time.
And I'm not sure about Lisa Raitt's French abilities. I mean, she was a cabinet minister, so she probably has some French. But
just working on it as we speak.
Oh, no doubt. And the only demerit, I think, is she's been doing this thing in question period lately where she's been like using like people that she talked to about like so-and-so in my writing.
Like Hillary does.
Yeah, it's like, well...
I was talking to Steve, the electrician, and it was like...
That's been that caused some snickers from the liberal side of the bench. A couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, well, this one, she's like, really? You're laughing at this?
I'm
sure it was a serious topic, but...
I'm sure it's a sincere thing, and it helps to put faces on issues. And I understand the point, but I mean, it's...
She's so street.
It almost seems like a bit of campaigning there in question period, which I don't like. And, you know, save the testimonials for the campaign trail. There is a debate coming up. I can't remember when. I think it's...
Cue the crickets. Yeah. I don't know. We'll find out.
No, but there is a candidate debate sometime in the near future.
Now, will that be everybody that's not necessarily paid up, but everybody who's a solid? Maybe they don't have the check.
That's an excellent question. I don't know.
Is Kevin O'Leary just going to show up? he obviously doesn't have financial hardship, or so we are led to believe. So,
interestingly, he did that like music video, quote unquote, on Tony Clement's porch when Tony Clement announced. And I don't know. One would think that if you have Kevin O'Leary, you know, with a guitar on your porch, you might ask him to.
Or was it the gazebo?
Ooh, gazebo. Yeah, I mean, I do.
All Canada with the gazebo.
I do wonder how much that might have factored in his decision, too. It's like, you know, I kind of opened myself up to this, but I mean, I.
Yeah, because no one's going to say, oh, I can't win. So
certainly, it certainly didn't hurt him in his own backyard, no. But. Yeah.
He can retire with the pension soon, so. Should be okay.
Oh, that's true, too. I mean, he's been. He's
no
been
financial hardship
enough.
There. What is it? $130,000 a month, year?
And he'd probably have a nice private sector job, too.
Audible sigh.
But yeah, I mean, at least, I mean, the thing I'll say about the conservative side of it, it's like it's rolling now. We've got names. We, you know, we can look at people. We can talk about their context. Past, how it might influence their future. NDP, speaking of crickets, NDP, man. And
need to get a cricket sound effect going.
I do. Yeah, I do think, I know it'll pick up at some, sooner rather than later, it'll probably pick up.
And Christmas, maybe? Yeah, no,
maybe after the New Year. But I mean, what it's more of a signal. Not it's not so much the death knell of the NDP as Steve Paikin wants you to think, but or maybe he's just spitballing. I don't know. But I don't think it's that. I think that the repudiation of Mulcair was like just so visceral, and it happened so quickly. It just kind of caught everyone off guard, and no one was sure. Like, okay, now what do we do? And I think that's what people have been trying to figure out.
I think if it ends up being Mulcair somehow back in the job, it will definitely be cue the crickets and probably the death march for the NDP. But that's a topic for another day, probably.
Yeah, why not?
Can you name some more candidates so we can talk about you, Dippers? Holy mackerel.
Moving right along, and this should be an NDP issue, minimum wage. And what attracted our attention, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about minimum wage lately, but there was a New York Times article by Neil Irwin where he went to pretty much the place where that's been driving labor costs so low. And a lot of people put that on Walmart's shoulders, but he went to Walmart, and this is the Walmart U.S. we're talking about. They have started last year, and continuing on to this year, have started a campaign to try and recruit and retain good people at the Walmart stores by, shocker, paying them more. Now, the U.S. federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. Walmart has boosted their minimum pay for entry-level employees, so the people who like stock the shelves and do the cashiers, $10 an hour. The average is like around $13.69. These are all U.S. dollars. But, I mean, that's almost triple what the federal minimum wage is. And to think this is Walmart doing this is really quite astounding because, as the article itself pointed out, Walmart's business model for years has been driving down costs by having fewer employees and spending less on, you know, benefits and training. And, you know, we've heard this come up in the campaign. There's Bernie Sanders a lot talking about how Walmart the government subsidizes Walmart because so many Walmart employees are on food stamps.
Yeah, and spending lots of money to keep unions out as well as something else that they do. And I believe they'll maintain that even with this supposed new era of Walmart. I don't know. It sounds like from that article that it's being driven by the shareholders. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, companies like Walmart and that only really do things exclusively to please the shareholders. They're not doing it because they particularly like the workers, but of course they're not going to say, no, we don't want your money. They'll take it. And they're not using the lingo minimum wage. They're calling it an efficiency wage, which is something I never really. So we're going to improve efficiency by giving them more money. And I guess it sounds like basic economics, like if you pay people better. It sounded like they're having a lot of trouble in certain stores with, you know, the store was dumpy and people don't want to go there. Plus with all the competition from the other. Well, not as much discount, but other sources of shopping, specifically Amazon was mentioned, dollar stores, Target. There's so much out there that they're not the only game in town anymore in terms of getting that kind of stuff. I'm beginning to think in this town, they're not the only game, but I realized how much I missed Zellers to say, well, I need a dish rack. Where do I go? It's like, that's probably Walmart. Some things are tough to find, but it's, there's, there was a, I want to call it a march, but there was a rally, I guess, at Queen's Park on October 1st mm-hmm. that coincided with the minimum wage in Ontario going up to a big, get the horns ready, $11.40 an hour. It was raised by 15 cents. And
I can taste that extra 15 cents
every
week.
Isn't that something? It's like, ooh, another 15 cents. Supposedly, at that rate, we'll get to the wage, which is the 15 in fairness is an active campaign, involves labor groups, faith groups, you name it. Mm-hmm. They figure that $15 an hour is what you'd need to get by in Ontario. So at that rate, with these 15 cent raises or whatever, by the year 2040, we might be at $15. And by then, you know,
by then it'll be $37.
You know, the dollar store will be the $10 store by that point, because that's how inflation works.
Yeah.
So as to whether, yeah, as to whether this efficiency wage is going to make a huge difference for Walmart, it looks like that graph that was in that article, it didn't look like that there was this. I mean, I don't think you can measure an adjustment like that instantly. It needs to be over a period to say, oh, maybe it has helped him improve things. You know, until they can get back into the super profitable realm, I guess, that they were, they're probably willing to try all kinds of things, including paying the workers better, which they should be doing anyway.
Well, I mean, I understand your cynicism, but I mean, that's the only way companies do things, if it has the effect on their bottom line. And Walmart being as cheap as humanly possible was having a bad effect on the bottom line. So in the interest of changing the bottom line, they tried the opposite of what they were doing. And I understand the cynicism behind that, but you know, that is kind of the point. I just want to take a break here and for the purposes of transparency and say my sister is a Walmart Canada employee. She's the assistant manager of the Orangeville Walmart. And she, interestingly, this kind of segues into one of the things that the Walmart US is trying to do, which is employee retention, upward mobility in the company. Because my sister started at the Walmart Deli and worked her way up to front office, and now she's assistant manager. And that is something Walmart's trying to encourage, employee retention, because the U.S., the economy is slowly and surely improving. And as the economy improves and people's employment opportunities improve, they will obviously go to where there is better money. And so that is another factor in this. Walmart is always potentially losing good people to better paying jobs, or jobs with more opportunity or better compensation. And that's something they want to avoid, understandably, because if you get good people, you want to hold on to good people. But if you can't pay good people what they're worth, then you can't moan when they decide to go seek other opportunities.
Well, and that's the thing, that whole structural sort of working your way up the ranks is okay for some. And I guess there's only so many positions that you can aspire to. And I guess, you know, if you hang around long enough. But part of the problem that we have, and I think we've definitely talked about this before in terms of the amount of precarity in the system and how many jobs people have, and that you're not specifically tied to one place. And then if you're working at Walmart, say, and then working somewhere else, maybe waiting tables or whatever to get some more money for your kids, and then another opportunity arises, you would probably dump the Walmart job first, I would think. Now, maybe that'll change with the wages going up. I'm not actually sure. I mean, have they seen, the wages are generally higher in Canadian stores, right? Because you hear a lot about Costco. I think that 13 number that you mentioned, I think that's the starting rate at Costco. And maybe they're stealing a bit of a page from Costco, because there's always, Costco is referred to as one of the sort of the big boxes that kind of takes care of, in air quotes, their employees in terms of paying them well and treating them well. I mean, that's another thing as well. It's not just the pay. It's like, how well are you treated? Do they schedule these wacky shifts for you that you can't necessarily work?
Yeah.
So all these things factor into that. But I don't know. I think there's very few millennials, let's say, that are in that realm of just working the one job.
Well, millennials are generally not big on loyalty. They're big on opportunity. You know, whether or not, if you give people opportunity, it gives them incentive to stick around and not start searching for opportunities. I think that remains to be seen. This is like still basically a pilot project.
Yeah.
And you know, you're right about Costco too. Costco has always been the, you know, the Marilyn Munster of retail, and that it you know, it does it the way you would expect to do it, with, you know, fair wages, decent compensation, you know, treating your employees well. And certainly if you drive past the Costco on Alora Road, the paying your employees decent wage hasn't hurt their bottom line. I think what is interesting about this is, because Walmart's become sort of the leader, not just in sort of retail, but in terms of how you conduct business, the race to the bottom, the hack and slash at your employees, narrow the instability of the jobs, profit, keep driving the profit up, more profit through more expansion. And this was an interesting statistic, that they had cut the workforce between 2008 and 2013 by 7%, but the square footage of the U.S. Walmarts increased by 13%. So they were expanding outward while cutting staff. So you were had more staff with more responsibility with the same crappy pay and the crappy expectations and the crappy schedule.
You're going to lose people.
Yeah, you're going to burn people out. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that model in Canada, probably through Walmart Canada, though I think a lot of economists and labor watchers will tell you Walmart Canada is not as bad as Walmart U.S.
It's because they're legally not allowed to be in some ways, probably, right?
No, fair enough.
You have to pay them this.
Right. But if you look at something like Tim Hortons, which has been, you know, at the center of a lot of the temporary foreign workers stuff. Mm-hmm. Walmart, Tim Hortons' model has been expansion, get employees at low cost through these temporary foreign workers who are just glad to be in Canada with work, and they're not the complaining sort. And you're not losing as many people. So it'll be interesting to see where Walmart, as a world leader in sort of these business trends, if it is successful, whether that will catch on and make people say, huh, treating people good equals profits? Interesting.
Yeah, and I think Tim Hortons, and not to take a personal jab or stab at Tim Hortons, but it is probably the most precarious industry in Canada along those lines, because it's, you know, you were talking about burnout and that. It's just like you see it on people's faces in there sometimes when it's busy. I don't go there a lot anymore. I used to quite a bit. But you're right, too. There's a Tim's on every block, and now we have two Walmarts. Oh, my goodness. So,
well, in Guelph, we have two Walmarts. I'm not sure it's terribly...
I remember all the hubbub about the first one. Actually, that's you should probably mention your... I haven't listened to it yet, but...
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Adam's done a bit of a flashback, let's say. Do you remember when?
Yeah, it's like a pop-up video of remember when. Yeah, the last week's Guelph Politicast, I had Ian Finlay, Susan Watson, and Sam Turton, who were all involved into various degrees and times with the Residents for Sustainable Development, which was the primary organization that protested Walmart here from 1995 right up until shortly after Walmart opened in 2006, because they were Walmart opened, and then immediately they filed a application to expand and have their grocery center too.
It's just really dirty pool.
But so you can go into Guelph politicast.podbean.com, download that, and of course you can download every episode so far. Well, not every episode, but a good... I don't expect you to go back to January 2016 and listen to those episodes, but if you missed a recent episode of Open Source is Guelph, you can go down there, download it, put it on your iPod, and away you go.
Did you play the song? I'm going to see if I can find it in the files.
I wonder... No, I didn't play
the
song. I didn't know who owned the rights, so I wasn't... I didn't know where to find it.
In the CD archives.
You know what's weird
we'll
is
play it one of these
even the RSD site, you can still find the RSD site at not-there.ca. But
oh, wow.
It only goes back to about 2002, because I guess the internet was the new thing.
It's a vintage
website.
Yeah,
it's totally vintage. It's
all text and one little picture.
Like, it's like, it makes Ain't It Cool
Walmart
News look like a Flash website, but it's worth checking out. Now that we're done kind of fluffing ourselves, we're going to take a break and do some ads and some music, and then come back with more topics here on Open Source is Guelph. You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph.
This is a rebroadcast of Open Sources Guelph from October 20th, 2016.
CFRU
That was the Slackers from their 2004 release, International War Criminal. And that song was called Propaganda. Surprise, surprise. I wasn't sure if the Slackers were still around, so I looked them up, and it seems on November 3rd they'll be playing Amsterdam. November 5th they'll be playing Leipzig, former East Germany. Yeah, so they're still around.
Let's go!
Let's go to Leipzig on a field trip. Yes. And sorry, German people, if I offended you with that accent. It wasn't meant to be offensive. Oh, it's just, I love saying Leipzig. It's, they're a band too, right? It's like, it just, you can't say Leipzig.
I'm not sure that was so much a German accent as it was a Dieter from Saturday Night Live
Leipzig
accent.
Leipzig und yes, indeed.
Now's the time on Sprockets when we dance.
The Slackers.
Yes. Undoubtedly, Amy Goodman is dancing today because she's not going to go to prison in North Dakota, which is good news for not just people who enjoy Democracy Now! Every weekday at 11 here on CFRU, but
that's our weekly mention of that show. Take a drink.
For Amy Goodman herself and for press freedom. If you weren't aware what happened, a couple of weeks ago we did talk about the protests against the North Dakota oil pipeline that is currently happening at Standing Rock Sioux, their territory, and they have been protesting for months. And then Amy Goodman got wind of it, went to North Dakota on the Labor Day long weekend, and reported on just the brutal, brutal tactics of the private security there for the oil company against these, I should say the oil pipeline company, not the oil company, but
TransCanada.
Yeah. They set the dogs on the protesters. They set pepper spray on the protesters. Amy Goodman got it all on audio, and she had a video crew with her, too, and they put that video up on Democracy Now! 14 million downloads later, it seemed that the government of the United States, the administration of Barack Obama, asked the them to stop construction until the First Nations people there could be better consulted. So all that credit goes to Amy Goodman, and the response of the North Dakota government, likely on the whims of the company building the pipeline, was, to borrow a phrase from our next subject, lock her up.
Yeah, these intimidation tactics are something that we see in that. I think Crown State Prosecutor was trying to imply that because of the, I guess you'd call it the bias that Democracy Now! Has.
Oh, yeah.
That Amy Goodman was actually a protester, not a journalist, which is not true. I mean, you know, her coverage does have a certain side to it, let's say, but I think her mandate, not unlike our mandate here, is to kind of cover it from the other angle, the angle that you don't see on Fox News, because on Fox News you always see violent protests erupt, riots, and I'd watched one of them just to get an idea of this. It was supposedly these reporters were attacked by someone, and it was just like a guy had grabbed this other guy's microphone because he didn't have a permit. It was like, oh, we're feeling threatened, and these, I don't know who these journals were. It didn't even say. I don't think they were from Fox. It could have been independent. Mm-hmm. There's lots of independents there. And then they called the police. I'm like, that's not a riot. That's not even violent. They just grabbed his mic and said, you can't be here. Yeah. So that gets all whipped up. And then we have stuff like Amy Goodman getting charged with inciting a riot, even though she's filming like Syria. Those dogs. Did you watch it?
Yeah.
Anybody who hasn't seen it, go to Democracy Now!
It's brutal.
Watch the footage that was filmed, and you know, you'll see. I mean, that is sort of the independent eye on what was going on, and that's why they hauled her in, because it's an intimidation tactic. Also,
that was some Bolton level stuff for just to get their Game of Thrones references in there more.
There you go. Yeah. Which I've never watched, so I need to be honest. I just know Jon Snow's a thing. Shailene Woodley from Insurgent. Insurgent? Divergent? Detergent?
Insurgent was the second one. Divergent. It's the
Divergent series.
Scotty, it's the Divergent saga.
See, I'm only half nerd. I think we had this discussion before. Also arrested. She was there with her mother and kind of arrested for the same thing that they were just filming and saying, look what's going on. And she's criminal trespass and engaging in a riot, which seems to be the standard charge. And I think she put her plea in today.
They arrested Triss, just like in the movie.
She's going to the mat. Yeah. I'll need to watch that, I think.
Jill Stein also has a warrant out. Jill Stein, Green Party candidate for president of the United States, has a warrant out against her.
She's not in the Divergent series, is she?
She's not in Divergent.
Maybe she will be now. If you're in the movies, you're going to get arrested. So, yeah, they don't care. They don't care. They probably didn't know who she was. She wasn't a famous face. I would think if, like, Robert Redford went, say, they'd probably like, oh, it's Robert Redford, get his autograph, and then quietly take him away. But they probably wouldn't charge him. Yeah, and the VP candidate was charged too, right?
Yeah.
Jammu Baraka.
Yeah.
Right? The Green. You folks didn't see it, but I did the Trump okay there. I guess I'm getting ready for the next topic already. But yeah, so the Army Corps of Engineers are saying that these people have a right to be there because of the First Amendment in the United States. So they have every right to be there. The land belongs to the Standing Rock Sioux, but then there's this, I wouldn't say a gray area, but this area of crossover where the pipeline company is doing their thing. Now, it sounds like they're going to build a more permanent settlement for the winter. Mm-hmm. And more power to them, because, I mean, the North Dakota winter. You think winter in Canada is bad. Oh, it's going to be pretty bad. But as to whether they're going to keep charging people, who knows? I mean, they will. There'll just be these minor charges. Although there was a, what's her name? Dia Schlossenberg. Schlossberg.
Yeah.
She was charged with a felony.
Yeah.
Like, you can go down a lot of years. I think it was upwards of 45 years.
Yeah.
She's a documentary filmmaker. I don't think she was inciting anything. She was just there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where it gets pretty scary.
Well, that was interesting about Amy Goodman. They originally charged her with trespass. And then they tried to take the charge up to riot, which is a felony. The trespassing is just a misdemeanor. But yeah, this was the prosecutor, Ladd Erickson. You know, talk about a Game of Thrones name.
Ladd Erickson. He's wearing a furry collar.
Yeah. He came out and said winter is coming and then tried to put Amy Goodman in jail. He was the one who kind of like, no, we're going to take this up to riot level. And he's also the one who you mentioned called Amy Goodman an activist and not a journalist, even though Democracy Now! Has been on the air for 20 years. I think when you do something for 20 years, it's...
She was a journalist before that, too.
Yeah, but she on the tape, you can hear her say, like, I'm from Democracy Now! And I think...
That's not a real show. Yeah.
I kind of think...
She should have said she was from Fox News. She'd have been okay.
Well, that's kind of where you don't want to be in trouble.
Yeah.
But
you're actually lying, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And I've always taken that approach in my own reporting. It's like it's always just best to be like out front and say, this is who you are. And I've done that at Stephen Harper rallies. And, you know, where it's like, you're not exactly a friendly person if you identify yourself as a journalist at one of those, but I did anyway because you don't want to get...
Did you get... I'm just curious, as an aside, did you get kicked out or anything?
No. Well, I had to struggle to get in, but I got in.
Fingerprinted?
No. Not quite.
But you didn't get policed like the people in...
No. I've been fortunate in my life and in coverage of these sorts of things not to have dogs sicked on me or be pepper sprayed
or militarized police, you know, beating on you. Yeah,
knock wood. But yeah,
it's still time, I guess.
Still time, thanks man. But yeah, it's dangerous because first of all, she was the only one there. She was the first one there, and she was the only one there. And yeah, there were the documentary crews there, but in terms of like sort of the immediate news coverage factor of it, she was on the scene. Everyone came after that, and it kind of came because of her. And this is where the independent press and I guess we can call it more activist press, but I'm not sure I understand the distinction between someone who comes at it with a point of view on an issue like Amy Goodman versus somebody like CNN, which is just like, we're just throwing stuff on the air because we have to make money and ratings and sell commercials and things.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an editorial slant too, is we're trying to sell you the news and sell you stuff during commercial breaks. That's another, that the philosophical underpinnings, another argument altogether, but yeah, it's, she, I guess the danger is they wanted to send a message because she was the first on scene. She was the one who brought the national media in her wake and in the wake of this. And because the mainstream media is so sketchy about not wanting to honk off the wrong people or get in trouble legal-wise speaking, that was, I mean, it was basically the journalistic equivalent of a slap suit. But so that's why it's kind of, it's more, it's bigger than just Amy Goodman that this didn't go the other way.
Well, I think it's also a message to the community journalists, let's call them, you know, anybody with the gear who's there just doing whatever, their podcast, their website. And I think it would be, well, you know, if Amy Goodman's getting taken down, then I'm going to be done. They've arrested 140 protesters so far on various charges. I don't know if they all had cameras, but they seem to favor the people that are documenting the process. And all this is almost an aside to the whole, you know, battle itself that's going on there in terms of does the pipeline go through or not. This is like a, but it hints at the bigger picture as to what may transpire. But it's on hold for now, isn't it? Like this is like a $4 billion project and it's paused.
Yeah, the Obama administration put it on pause.
So they're waiting for a change at the top, probably to see.
Yeah, probably.
It's a really interesting...
I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, they have talked about engaging the local First Nations people to try and find out how they can go from here. But, I mean, construction has started, and I guess there's only one of two options. They can either just stop the whole thing altogether and send all the bulldozers home, or they can find a way to keep it going, even with tacit support of the First Nations people there.
And I would think if oil tanks again, we probably won't see it. But anyway.
Interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Theo James is still at large, of course. Theo James is, if Scotty doesn't know, is Shailene Woodley's boyfriend in the Divergent movies. He's still at large. I don't...
Are they actually...
I don't know if they're looking for him or not, but... No. But
I need to bone up on my films.
Yeah. Anyway, speaking of movies, we kind of watched a disaster movie last night. I don't know if you saw the debate. As I talked about at the top of the hour, Trump at a rally, Donald Trump, Republican nominee for president of the United States, that will never be something that comes off the tip of my tongue that I completely buy. But he said today that he will only accept the results of the election if he is the winner, which, if you pay attention to the national polling, is increasingly unlikely because you have states like Arizona, which is red, now as a toss-up state. And so Hillary Clinton basically has 300 electoral college votes in the bag. You need 270 to be president of the United States. Trump has 170 in the bag. He is likely going to lose, and he is not taking it well.
No. What did he say? During the debate, he said, I'm going to look at it at the time.
Yes.
So in other words, if it's not what he wants, he's going to kvetch.
He's going to keep us in suspense.
But
like he's freaking Alfred Hitchcock.
He already started, though. Like he's already full on. Like it's a fraud. It's a sham. It's like flipping off.
This is the weird thing. This is the weird thing. He's been going on about this for, it seems like weeks, but it may be just the last week. But after the debate last night, after he told Chris Wallace, I'm going to leave him in suspense, he had his surrogates were coming out and like, well, why is he going to concede something that's going to happen in the future? Look at what happened to Al Gore. This is the first time I can remember I've heard Republicans talk in glowing terms about Al Gore like he's some kind of folk hero.
It's far enough away.
Because he took his concession back like an American, I guess. I mean, even though you point out that the extenuating circumstances in 2000 were pretty unprecedented and that the recalls in Florida were mandatory. It wasn't because Al Gore took his concession back. They were happening. They were going to happen. And Yeah, so they're touting Al Gore as this folk hero. Well, Trump is you can't read it that way. Trump is basically saying, unless I win, I will not concede the election. And then you have Mike Pence, you have Ivanka Trump, Rance Priebus, Kellyanne Conway, all coming out and saying, oh, no, no, we'll concede if it's a clear victory. And it's like, well, that's great. Let's hear the candidates say that.
Yeah, and the excuse is that's just Trump being Trump. But if you go back in time a little bit, blame deflection is how this guy works.
Yeah.
It was the same when Ted Cruz won Iowa. Trump was Ted Cruz stole Iowa and committed fraud. Fraud is the thing. He's a fraud. That's a complete fraud. Like he has those staple words that he uses. Of course, another one is disaster. And I chalked up about five or six on completely different topics before I fell asleep. I have to admit, about an hour in, old man Hertz was like, gone. Because a lot of it was a rerun. I noticed some of the talking points were the same. I thought of the three debates, this was the better one. To like right off the bat, it's guns, abortion, immigration. Like they went right for it. There was no wishy. Well, not to say that, you know, confronting Trump about his comments about women is wishy-washy, but this was issues. Like they were presented with issues and they went at it, which was good in a way. But you can also, Trump is only good for about 30 minutes before he starts to, and I think they have studied this. It's like, how can we egg him on? I mean, this is what you do in politics. Like, which button can we push?
Oh, she totally triggered him.
The big red one, yeah.
She triggered him in the immigration round.
Such an easy mark. You know, exactly, just,
She triggered him in the immigration round, which I think was the second round. It was like six rounds of like with different topics. But the immigration one was the second round, and she triggered him when she said he went to Mexico and he choked. And Trump does not like to hear that he choked, that he's a loser. So she like set that off sort of perfectly, because it was like right after that. That things started going to heck, and
she's a puppet. She's a nasty woman, which has traction of its own. That's unreal. Yeah.
And that's aside from the bad hombres and Bigley,
and what was one of the things he said was, I think it was about we bought the I think Bernie Sanders first pointed this out. It's like he's using Chinese steel in Trump Tower and that.
Also, undocumented Polish laborers on Trump Tower.
Yes. And the comment that he made was, I'd make it impossible for me to do that.
Yes.
And I was like, what?
That
what
was...
What are you saying? Like, yeah. It's okay that I've done it, but then when I'm in power, I won't do it because it's like, that's all.
The Saturday Night Live stuff, like the stuff that's like primed for the late night comedian sort of, you know, kind of covers that up. But that was like the moment in the first debate where he says... where he said he was smart because he doesn't pay taxes.
That makes me smart. Yeah,
right. Because when she said that, she's like, he says, well, why didn't you stop me? It's like, if you pass laws and pass regulations that wouldn't make me do this, I wouldn't do it. And it's like, well, what kind of businessman are you that you need the government? I mean, this kind of maybe goes back to our Walmart. You know, you need government to tell you to make you act a certain way. And this goes right back to even his stupid Make America Great Again hats, which are made in China. And he's getting out there talking about taking jobs back from China and making American jobs. Well, make your hats in America, bro. You're rich enough to be able to afford an extra couple of cents to make your hats in America, right?
Perfectly good hat factory in Buffalo probably needed work there. But what made there was one that really made my ears perk up when they were talking about immigration.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying, he went into the whole they're bringing drugs spiel. He didn't say some of them are rapists this time, but
yeah, when he was restrained.
When he said the heroin was poisoning the blood, that phrase, you may or may not have heard it before, but that is, and I hate to make the comparison, but as soon as he said it, that is total Hitler and the Jews. Poisoning the blood was, he said that, and I was like, what does he read at night, like at bedside when he's not tweeting? Because that's like Mein Kampf territory, and I, you know, no joke there, folks. You look that up. It's like that was the view, and I know there's a bit of a spin on it. We was talking about the heroin, but to use that exact phrase, which is a Hitler phrase, I was shocked. I really was like taken aback by that. More so, I mean, not even everything he says is inflammatory, as far as I'm concerned. But that took the cake for me. I was like, oh, you said that. I'm sure
there's a lot of
Jewish person in America went, oh, no, I didn't go there.
There's a lot of like hidden meanings, the things he says. Like he was talking about Watch for it in the cities. Watch it in the cities.
There's of course, something going on.
Something going on. What it means
it's the
is
Jews. Yeah.
in that particular instance, it means the Black and Latino community. Because mm-hmm. where do they live? The cities.
The
they
guns
don't live
are there.
In,
the heroin's there.
Right. I was revisiting the debate, at least in a written way, because Lord knows I couldn't watch it again. But
it's painful.
The abortion portion at the top of the show, with guns and abortion in the Supreme Court, was like fairly telling because he hasn't been particularly sharp on abortion. He's like been pro-choice before, and then he runs for president and he's pro-life.
He's become
and
Mr.
he's talking
older
about
than
that. Some kind of punishment for the woman and things like that. And then last night he's talking about Supreme Court and he's like, oh, I'm going to appoint like pro-choice pro-life Supreme Court, and then it's going to go away. It's just going to go away, and then it'll be up to the states. And he kind of yada-yadas over the over the repeal of Roe v. Wade. And it's again, one of these buzz things. The people who want Roe v. Wade repealed knows what he means, but I don't think he really understands kind of the process of how the Supreme Court works. But the thing that really got me about the abortion debate was talking about ripping the child out of the womb at 9 months.
Days before the birth, they ripped the child out.
Yes, which is called infanticide, not abortion. But I mean, it just goes to show his lack of understanding, or whether it's purposeful or ignorance. I'm sure there are a lot of people in the United States who loved hearing that, like, yeah, pro-life, yeah. But, I mean, it does nothing to address the health of the woman and the health of the mothers and women's health and all these others, which Hillary was touching on. And I found her response to this was fairly eloquent, as it should be as a female running for president of the United States. But Trump's response was like something out of, like, I don't know, a horror movie where he's just, like, ripping it out of the womb. And it's like, you don't even know how anything works.
Yeah, and then he does the meander. There was a comparison made, which I thought was hilarious and very accurate, too, was somebody who's sort of fudging the book report.
Yeah.
Oh, the grapes. They had so much wrath. Like, he just kind of...
Hashtag Trump book reports.
Is that what it was? That's the hashtag. There you go. So I have to do some more digging because that was pretty funny. But that is... That's how he rolls. And especially, you know, with the abortion... Not the abortion question. When he had his own kind of Aleppo moment, didn't he? There was about... A three-paragraph, I was doing a bit of reading too, a three-paragraph answer where he's talking about the situation
in Mosul.
In Mosul, yeah. Aleppo, Syria, what side is al-Assad on?
Yeah.
And I read it a couple of times and it was like, it really, really doesn't make sense. There's no hard, there's no policy there, like I'm going to side with this and that. He was trying, and there was a sort of a defense of the Russians in there somewhere because Hillary doesn't hesitate. She's done it in all three debates to go after Russia. Who now seem to be steaming towards the UK, by the way. It was a report I saw before. I was like, what's going on? But that's a separate story. But jab after jab at Russia, and I don't know Putin. I don't know him, but he's not going to go work with him.
Like, took 3 seconds for Twitter to dig up this tweet from 2013 where he like invites Putin on Twitter to the Miss USA pageant. And he says, I'll be your best friend if you come. That's not an exact quote, but I mean, it's pretty close. But I mean, it's...
Never met him.
I mean, it's such a rare thing that you have the Democratic nominee for president of the United States coming out strong against Russia, the Republican nominee not being strongly against Russia and actually being like tacitly for Russia, and he attacks her because Putin doesn't like her. It's like, yeah, you know what? You don't want somebody like Putin liking your president, I don't think. But for some reason, that's a demerit against Hillary and Trump world.
Yeah, because Bush and Putin got along for a little while. A little while. And
Bush saw his soul.
Yes. He's like, I think I can work with him.
2.5 more weeks, people, is
yes,
the point.
Yes, and the odds are good. We'll let you know that we're going to have an election night special, unprecedented. We're going to cover the U.S. election. We're just kind of cobbling it together now. Original hits, original stars, we'll let you know.
Yeah, we will let you know, but unfortunately we have to wrap it up for this week on Open Sources Guelph. You can stay connected to our website at opensourcesguelph.com, on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, or go to Twitter at @OS_Guelph, and of course you can download this and other episodes of Open Sources Guelph on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through iTunes. You can connect with me personally at AdamMayDonaldson on twitter.com. Or you can go to my political blog, guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter as well. And there is a thing on the Spanner Book, so check it out. It's a week old now. It's already dated. It's old media. No, just have a look. Tell me what you think. I got my other blog to work on, too. I've gone back to being a student. Work. Oh, my goodness.
I know. There's so much work.
Yes.
Never enough.
So little time.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Stay tuned here for more programming on CFRU, 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca. Unfortunately, DJ Sounds Good to Me is off this week, so I'm not sure what's coming up, but it will be great.
We're playing a favorite from the archives.
Oh, there you go. It's a rerun. But still, be back here next week for more Open Sources Guelph, Thursdays at 5 p.m., which will not be a rerun. We'll see you next week.